I'm speaking with Richard Johnson today from By Chadsey's Cairns out in Hillier, and we're sitting in this beautiful barn. I feel like we've come full circle, Richard, because I think I probably met you about 20 years ago.
Yeah, probably about 20 now.
Yeah. And you're about to retire, like imminently.
We're hoping to be able to wrap up sometime next summer. Mm-hmm. We took a different approach. We were originally going to sell the winery, and a bunch of things happened. And so we decided not to do that, but rather to stay in the farm. We moved here in 95. Well, I walked into the field behind the old apple house there, and I said to Vida, you know, I think you could grow grapes here. And she said, no. So for 4 years, we didn't. But then I took work back in Toronto, and I didn't want to move back. So they accepted me as president of Centennial College, but not living in Toronto anymore. But I knew I couldn't commute for more than 4 or 5 years. So that's when we started planting grapes, because we wanted the farm to pay for itself so that when I came back from the college, we'd be able to stay. And basically, I've been back here full-time since 2004, 2 years after our first release back in 2002.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I remember your wine at the time. When I first arrived in the county, I think it was the only wine that was 100% county grapes.
Yeah, I think Long Dog usually had 100% mm-hmm. as well. But generally speaking, people were supplementing with Niagara wines, or only had Niagara wines
right.
during those times. It was a way of getting started, getting some cash flow moving. But this farm of ours is 213 years old and has had fruit on it for all that length of time. And I frankly wasn't interested in having any Niagara fruit. The first year when we opened, we just had our whites, Riesling, Gewurz, and Chard that we planted in 99 and 2000. So our original winemaker who taught Vida how to make wine, Martin Gemrick, had some Gamay in Niagara, and we bought his Gamay. So that was our red that year. But the next year, we had our own Gamay and our own Pinot. Yeah, I think the last time we used any fruit from away was 2006.
Being one of the pioneers of the wine industry here, you know, somebody had to be the first, and I know you weren't the absolute no. first, but you were among the first. So what drew you to wine, and was this something that you intended to do when you move out here?
Well, no. When we first moved out here, I was coming out to run a post-secondary institute that the Mohawks have called Nations Technical Institute. And I'd met them when I was in charge of the community college system and loved the work they were doing on prior learning assessment. And so when they offered me a job working with them, I jumped at it. And we came across the farm, and we got it for an amazing price in those days, and just by the luck of the draw, as it turned out. And but when we moved here, as I say, the first time I walked into that field behind the apple house, I said, I immediately thought grapes. My aunt lived in Provence, and I loved going to Provence, and had a romantic affection for the idea. I'd been raised on a sort of very small farm, but you know, that's annuals, that's not planting like acres and acres of roses, which is the equivalent of doing this sort of thing. So it was a total new learning experience for me, which was also, I think, really, really good in general for a person. I was in my mid-50s then, right? That's why we're quitting. I'm 76. It's time to move on. And
is that the age? The hard I don't know. Well, mark my calendar.
Apparently, some people do it earlier. So
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Apparently, you can retire at 65. I had no idea. No one talked about this.
I know. It's crazy. But it's very hard work. And I mean, over the years, I mean, we've seen so many changes, too. Yeah. So how do you think viticulture has changed, and what have we learned, and what are we doing better now than we were at that time?
Well, for vinifera, for the fine wines, we knew nothing. And we were all presuming incorrectly. There were about seven of us, I guess, who started back in 98, 99. And ourselves and Long Dog, I guess, were the first two to try burying the buds for winter survival. And that came, again, at the suggestion of Martin Gemrick, who sold us the grapes. But when I ordered, it was okay when I ordered 3,000, but when I said I wanted another 15,000, he said, I'm not going to sell them to you. You're never going to have a crop. You're just too
right.
cold here.
Yeah,
it's not going to work. And then he gave us the idea for doing this, and it was all just trial and error in terms of making it work. But that first couple of years when we did it and Long Dog did it, we were the only ones who basically had local vinifera survive because everybody else was getting advice from people in Niagara to do it their way.
Right.
In fact, they'd bring them here, and I guess to see them down at Long Dog too, to say, don't go like this. You know, it's too low. It's too ugly. You won't be able to do it, sort of thing. So we had to invent this new way of growing grapes. Mm. And then it became very clear to people like Deborah at Kloss & Chase that she couldn't do it like she used to do it in Niagara. And she switched right away when she saw we were having survival and they weren't, right?
Right.
But since then, we've had to learn how to be more effective in how we do it to increase the bud yields. And so we did all sorts of experimentation with different kinds of trellising to get two or three more nodes where you could have maybe mm-hmm. have one or two more clusters come through, because one or two clusters per vine can really make a big difference in terms of what comes through. And we learned that you've got to get the stuff out early and get it in the air, and you've got to get your graft union uncovered so that sun can get on it to produce new shoots, because we rely on making new shoots for next year's trunks every year, right? And that's something no other region had to think about. So as I say to people who know a fair amount of wine when they come here, I mean, they can't believe we have a 24-year-old vineyard, right? And so the difference is we don't have a trunk that would be normally sort of 2.5 to 3 inches in diameter at this point. Mm-hmm. We replace that every year. But the graft union, which is normally the same size as your trunk, is 5 times that size, right?
Oh,
because
wow.
we've had to expand it and have new growth coming from it. And that then increases the problems of how to cover it properly.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So soils like ours here, which are sandier, are a lot easier than turning clay when it's wet. Right, and so people finding the right time to turn the soils became a big challenge. And now they can use the tarping,
the textiles,
and that's almost there in my view. I don't think it really is there yet, because unless we get climate warming happening even faster than we think, because if it is happening fast, then that 10-degree protection it gives you. Maybe enough, but we in the county are very used to having 34 degrees below zero, and if your buds are getting killed at 20 below, that's not going to protect you. And then your plants may be very vulnerable under there, especially if you start getting used to them making it through every year, and you don't cover the graft, which I think some people are not doing now. And then they're going to get caught like Niagara does every 8 or 10 years. But Niagara at least has their graft union covered, and they just lose their product for that year. But there's a danger if the textiles don't become more efficient. I think that people could start losing the xylem and phloem in the little trunks that they now are developing, right? So I think we're all learning new things all the time. And one of the wonderful things about this place has been that we've all shared. And Marg Appleby, God love her, who is our ag rep from the ministry, still convenes, tours of the vineyards and people meeting once a week, almost every 10 days, to talk about the problems they're having in a particular year and then sharing how they're trying to solve them and that kind of thing. And that's been the only way we've really made it as quickly as we did. And that, of course, is one of the phenomenal things that when people look at the history of this, I mean, we became a wine region after only 7 years. And we had fewer than 2,000 acres of grapes.
What year was the DVA? Was it
2007, I think, is when it finally came through. Yeah.
What do you think the future of Prince Edward County is? Where do you think it's going from here? And if you were just starting now, coming into it, what would you do?
Okay, those are all very interesting questions. The county is totally different than other places because we didn't have many people with money.
Mm-hmm.
The wine industry is usually filled with people with bags of money who then wanted to have a show place for themselves, and they wanted to do it with wine, right? They're all around the world. That's the way it works. And we only had one or two people who had the kind of money you should really have to start a winery. Everybody else was...
Families, mostly.
Oh, yeah. And Delgado.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful guy. I'm really sad to see him pass. When he came out here, the first time I met Pat away from one of the meetings, he was managing the No Frills. He was stacking boxes on a, and I turned to him and asked him for where the coffee was, as I recall. and that's the kind of person who started a vineyard here. Well, that's not going to be possible in the future, because in those days,
well, you could actually buy property for a reasonable price. Then.
Really reasonable, and we still are proportionally cheaper than Niagara, right? And but it's now a much more expensive game to get into. And now we know what we're dealing with here. People know that they have to have windmill machines to move the air around. They know they have to probably put in more adjustable style trellising than we had in the past. Mm-hmm. And all of that costs money.
Yeah.
So the upfront stuff is going to change things. So that's why now we are seeing some significant money come into the county in terms of some of the acquisitions that have happened. And that's good and bad, in my view. I love the fact that this was a ground-up kind of average person kind of venture out here, and people took their passion and made something happen, right? However, if you want to get recognition in this business, which has an awful lot of snob aspects to it, you've got to be able to present on the same kind of stage as the others do. And so I think that's going to be one of the big changes we're going to see, is substantial money coming in.
What's next for you? What are you looking forward to?
We're looking forward to enjoying the place for the first time in years.
You're still going to do music events?
I think we'll occasionally have an odd concert here. Mm-hmm. People like Jill Barber, it's part of our family traditions now for the two of us.
Colin Linden.
Yeah, I'd like to have Colin.
Great people through here.
But I think we'll have to change how we do it. But mostly, I've had a very public life. And for a while, we'd like to have a bit of a private life. And I look forward to that.
Thank you very much for speaking with me. And you're so much a part of the history of this place. And it was a pleasure talking to you today, Richard.
It's
been
fun. Cheers.
Thank you to Astrid and Richard. Now, don't go anywhere, because we still have to hear from Brenda Little, community reporter, as she chats with Jennifer Cobb. And right after a short break, we'll be back with Liz Zylstra from Prince Edward County Libraries.